Gardner. Today we're going to have a discussion about county maintenance of effort in the area of mental health. And we're going to begin today with Paul Fleischner, the director of the Olmsted County Community Services.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Senators. We're actually switching the order a little bit. I am Paul Fleischner, Director of Olmsted County Community Services. With me is Judith Brumfield, and I think her comments would be best in front of mine, and then I'll jump
All
in.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Judith Brumfield, and I'm the Deputy Director of Community Services in Scott County, and here today representing MAXA, AMC, and MICA. What we wanted to do was to make a few brief introductory comments about the mental health maintenance of effort, describe what it means to counties, and then Paul will talk a little bit more about some potential. I want to emphasize at the very beginning, we are not here asking for anything today in terms of a bill. We're not proposing a repeal of the maintenance of effort for mental health. What we do want to talk about is a need for greater flexibility and for the ability for counties to really meet the needs of our consumers. The mental health maintenance of effort was passed in 2006 by the legislature as part of the comprehensive mental health redesign. Each county expenditure at that point was set as the average of 2004 and 2005 expenditures that would also be adjusted for increases or decreases in state grants or non-county revenue for mental health services. That sounds relatively simple. In effect, that wasn't nearly as possible when the state started trying to figure how the MOEs would be allocated to counties. Mm-hmm. Also wanting to make clear that MOEs are basically a mandate for how county would spend property tax money. And we believe that MOEs that are specific to programs are designed to be silos. And in reality, the counties don't provide services in siloed manners. We try and look at comprehensive services to meet the full needs of our constituents. Therefore, when counties are looking at property tax, we have a need to be transparent, a need to be accountable, and a need to make sure that we're providing a quality service. The MOE assigned to the mental health doesn't allow us really to do any of these three things. You will hear things about we need an MOE in order to make sure that counties continue to spend money for mental health. Indeed, that isn't a fact. There's no reality basis to that assumption. The transparency issue, the county MOEs were established based on an estimated expenditure, not real county budgets, and that was because the state really has no way of telling exactly how much money counties were spending for mental health in 2004-2005. So they have some numbers, and then they had to estimate from service areas to determine how much counties were spending. They also had to make estimates of how much revenue counties were getting for mental health services. And again, that's not accurate across counties. Part of what they used was an estimate from the old CSSA grant, before it became the CCSA grant, and that was in 2003, so county expenditures have changed. What that means as a bottom line is some counties were assigned an MOE that was valid for them, some counties were assigned an MOE that was actually less than what they were currently spending, and some counties were assigned an MOE that was greater than what they were currently spending. It's adjusted for revenue losses for the mental health program. There's no adjustment for revenue loss that is not specific to the mental health program. So when counties lost program aid, there's no adjustment to the mental health MOE. What that means is there's a disparate assignment of the loss in program aid to other program areas because you can't take an equal amount off of the mental health MOE. An indication of how difficult this was for counties is that the first year, 27 counties did not meet their MOE. This is not because 27 counties spent less money in the first year than they had spent in 2004-2005 average. It was because the MOE was not accurate to what counties were actually spending. The timeliness of reporting. Again, because counties can't budget to meet their MOE because it's not based on the amount counties budget or the amount they actually spend in their budget, they need to depend upon the state to report back to us whether or not we're meeting our MOE. There's a long delay in getting those reports back. So in mid-November of 2008, I received a report that estimated whether or not I would meet my MOE based on my expenditures for the first half of the year. So with 6 weeks left in the year, if I were not meeting my MOE, I have to make the kind of budget adjustments that would allow me to make it. And it's estimated based on only the first two quarter expenditures. This doesn't allow counties to be accountable to our taxpayers. We can't budget and then be transparent to the taxpayers to say, this is how much we're budgeting, this is how much we're spending in these programs, and this is where we expect to come out at the end of the year. I think the most important issue, aside from the difficulty with telling the taxpayers what we're spending or how much we've spent, is the reality of we don't have control over our service quality. The MOE is based upon brass code reporting, meaning if we report that we made expenditures in a certain area, then it gets credited toward our MOE. But we have to report expenditures according to how the codes are set up, and that doesn't necessarily reflect mental health expenditures. An example is that for adults with serious and persistent mental illness, we know it's very, very important that they receive employment services in order to stabilize and live in the community. But any of the money that we spend on that is reported as an adult service expenditure, so there's no credit toward the MOE for counties who provide employment services for adults. Counties who have looked at putting children in therapeutic foster care close to their home where they can continue in the same school and have more contact with their family, as opposed to residential treatment that may be 200 miles away and taking them out of their home school, cannot count that money toward their MOE because that money is reported as a child welfare expenditure as opposed to a mental health expenditure. Also, because of the way it was set, it does not take into account those counties who may have made extreme expenditures in those 2 years due to certain conditions in those counties. For example, a county in a regional treatment center area where that regional treatment center was closing had an extremely high per diem during those years because of the decrease in the population in the regional treatment center. That became part of their MOE. As we moved into best practices and have community residential housing for these people at a much less cost, the MOE was set artificially high, and the county is not allowed to use that money in any other way. Counties that looked at providing services closer to home for children, again, may have changed their practice in a way that is better for the consumer. It's what families want, but they were penalized. What this has in effect is a penalty to counties who are trying to do a better job, a more cost-effective job with the taxpayers' money. One of the things, just in summary, again, you'll hear that if counties aren't required to spend this money for mental health, we'll walk away from the program. There's no reality basis to this kind of assumption. There are a number of examples where counties do not walk away from the needs of our citizens. In 2003, due to the major budget deficit, county program money for specific social services was cut by about 25%. Counties made up much of that loss in 2003. The Deficit Reduction Act a couple of years ago dramatically cut what counties receive in support for the child support program. The legislature gave a one-time appropriation for that. That one-time money has run out, and counties have stepped up and filled in for the child support program. This last summer, the state public defenders stopped providing CHIPS representation. Even though counties believe that the state transfer and the transfer of county program aid made that a state responsibility, counties have stepped up and are covering the cost of attorneys for parents in CHIPS cases. These are just three examples to show you counties believe it's important that we continue providing the service that our residents need, and we will not walk away from the service. Again, we're not asking for a repeal of the MOE. We're not even asking for consideration of those parts of it, which is about half of it, that are either a cost share or a match. We recognize that's very important for drawing down federal money. What we are asking is for consideration of more flexibility that would allow counties to really look at how we budget, how we communicate with our taxpayers about the money we're spending, and how we look at innovative best practices to meet the needs not only of our mental health constituents, but of all of our service population. Thank you.
Again, Paul Fleissner, Director of Olmsted County Community Services. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm going to add a little context to what we're talking about. I think it's important to note that right now we're in obviously difficult budget times. Just to bring that down to a county level, in my Human Services Department, just to somewhat prepare for the 2009 budget, we've had 29 layoffs and we've decreased an additional 21 FTEs through attrition. We're also now going on unpaid furloughs up to 12 days for all staff. So we're facing some really difficult times in how we manage serving our communities. As Judith said, we need more flexibility and tools as we try to manage through this difficult time. Counties propose the idea that we have a different kind of MOE, or perhaps we develop a performance-based model. For example, if the state dollars decrease or the federal dollars decrease, there'd be a corresponding decrease in our MOE. Or another option would be a county agreement around outcomes. The state is working with counties and advocates and others to define better outcomes in this service area. They include decreased inpatient days, increased time between hospitalizations, increased penetration rate, which means we're serving the number of SPMI folks we're supposed to. In our county, we already are measuring those things. We're also measuring recovery markers, as we call them, things like increased employment and increased stable housing, which all lead to better outcomes and usually more effective services. Again, as Judith said, counties are not asking for a full repeal of the MOE. I think we do need some flexibility. We need the state to recognize the difficult situation we're in. And we understand if we don't invest, enough in these kinds of services, it leads to things like increased commitments. Those are county dollars. Increased jail time. Those are county dollars. Increased law enforcement time. Those are county dollars. We won't walk away. We have a history of not walking away. But it feels like right now we face a no-win situation with levy limits and MOEs that have no flexibility. I think this could be an opportunity where we align our incentives to work toward better outcomes. So let's not miss that opportunity. Let's look at developing a fair performance-based system. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Fleissner. The maintenance of effort for mental health services has been in your base for a number of years, has it not?
Yes, it has, Madam Chair.
So I'm not exactly sure what the connection is with levy limits, because the amount that's in your base doesn't grow.
Madam Chair, committee members, the new mental health maintenance of effort that was put on counties in 2006 was based, again, on an average expenditures in 2004-2005. So that's not a very old base. Again, if it were the actual money that counties were budgeting and spending on mental health services during that time period, then indeed we could say that it was in the base and it wouldn't be a major issue. But because of the way it was figured and had to be estimated and then was averaged across the state, it doesn't necessarily reflect what counties were actually spending in those 2 years. So it's not then in the base of counties.
Well, even if it wasn't the right amount, if somebody's disputing the amount, it still has been in your base since 2006. We're in 2009 now. And there is no growth on it, so...
There can be growth. Yeah.
Yes, Madam Chair, there is growth if there is a growth in revenue within those programs. So, for example, if there's increased targeted case management money, then there is growth.
So, theoretically, Madam Chair, if you had an increase in your caseload, you tried to meet that need by increasing your targeted case management, your maintenance of effort would grow.
Other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a particular topic of interest, I'm sure, to many of us here, but especially in my district, and maybe this is true of other senators as well, but our community mental health centers have been struggling. Some closed. The one right now in Bemidji is threatened with the possibility of closure. And I guess I'm not sure that I understand the basis for, you made the statement, Ms. Drumfield, there's no reality basis to saying we need an MOE to make sure counties are spending money on mental health. I guess I'm just concerned that we don't just accept assumptions or statements without, it seems to me from what I've learned here is that different counties are making different levels of effort. Some are putting additional money into mental health as compared to others. All county mental health centers seem to be challenged because of reimbursement rates, but certainly some in some areas more than others. And in my county, where we've had the highest suicide rate in the whole state, we have a community mental health center that's threatened with the possibility of closure. So I do have a concern about the level of commitment and funding. And I also have a concern with the idea that we move to some kind of an outcome-based model along the lines that you're describing. I mean, I've been told by mental health professionals in my area that if they simply had the funding to pay for using what they all know and agree are best practices, they would, you know, things would turn out much better. If you have some counties where there's additional money being put in and you're measuring outcomes, like it just seems like the more money then is going to buy more money coming from the state, and the counties that don't have the ability to fund or have made the decision not to fund mental health are going to get less money, and you're just going to have a downward spiral in those areas that still need mental health services. I don't know how you can gauge the need for this based on a performance model, because if the need is there, it's there. And to not fund it when you have the need seems to me like a No Child Left Behind approach. I just am concerned about that.
Madam Chair, Senator
Olson. Ms. Drumfield.
It's Brumfield. I think the agenda is incorrect. It's with a B.
Sorry.
That's okay. You had several questions, and I may not be able to address them all, but I'll briefly try and approach a couple of them. First of all, the community mental health centers. Understand that those are not county funded. They get their funding from a number of different areas, partly mental health, health care benefits by billing for their hours. Some are certainly medical assistance. In the past, counties have heavily subsidized the mental health centers by giving them money in addition to what they earn for the work they do. Much of that money stopped coming to counties and to mental health centers in 2003. So, yes, they have been hurting since then, along with the cut in rates in a number of areas, and that health plans are simply not paying for the level of services they have previously. So that's not really a county responsibility to provide that. What counties provide are the case management services, and they may be able to purchase some additional services, but case management services are really the responsibility of counties. Now, in Scott County, we actually have a county-run mental health center, and the amount of money we're putting into that center increases every year because we are picking up the cost that is no longer being borne by private health insurance or public health insurance. So there is an issue with that, but that's not because counties are walking away from our responsibility, which is the case management responsibility. The other issue that you've brought up about performance measurement, and it's one option, but something we think we should look at, which is not how much do you spend, but whether or not you get the outcomes that people want. And we certainly have to get better at being able to measure that. But one of the things that all government is being challenged to do is provide more efficient, more cost-effective services. So if counties can find ways to provide services at less cost that are better services with better outcomes, we shouldn't be penalized by not being allowed to then redirect some of the savings to other areas where there's a massive need. Counties certainly do spend different amounts based on the county. You look at the tax capacity of counties, that's dramatically different. The priorities of counties are different because they're elected bodies who respond to their taxpayers. But if counties spend more money, that doesn't bring more state money, and it doesn't necessarily bring more federal money.
Any other questions at this time? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bloomfield, both of you did a very good job in explaining the issue. And I think mainly my comments will be about this and about the governor's proposal for the county, bringing the counties together to the 15th.
Yeah, we have that on the agenda next.
That's right. And I guess I'd just like to say that between the counties that I serve, five, and all the legislative hearings that I went around, I heard from counties from at least a fourth, a fifth of the state. And this was clearly an issue of having more flexibility with your MOEs. And in order to make something like this work, where you join the Human Services, Health and Human Services departments together, which I do serve two counties that are already practicing that, Martin and Faribault County, I think something that came out from those hearings was you need the flexibility. And instead of joining these counties by population, give the counties or the authority to make these relationships on the services that are delivered. And this is something that's going to really hamper that if we don't give you flexibility with the MOEs. So I trust the counties that they are going to deliver the services, even with this flexibility, because that is what you do. So I'm anxious to hear the testimony on the governor's proposal.
Other questions? Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, just to follow up on that, I guess I'm still confused here, because it seems to me that if the counties knew of better ways to deliver services to get the most value for the money that they could in delivering best practices in mental health, we would want them to do that, and I'm not sure that I understand what's stopping them from doing that. If there are some specific requirements, then, you know, we should know about those. If there's something that says you can't deliver this service in the best possible way. But there's a difference between saying we want to deliver services in the best possible way in terms of best practices and saying we want to take that money and redirect it somewhere else. I can't imagine there's any end to there's so much unmet need in the area of mental health right now that we couldn't maximize the use of those dollars by using them in the best possible ways, however the counties might know to do that, and still have an unmet need. So it seems to me that the concern, I just wonder if the two things aren't really unrelated, and one is kind of being used to rationalize another, but they're not really connected. To say, well, we can squeeze some savings on a mental health so we can use them on roads or whatever, because otherwise we won't be able to do the best job in mental health, isn't logical to me.
So in other words, I think what she's saying is when we, on at the state level, we are always struggling to find savings to invest more dollars into mental health because there is so much more need, and especially at the community-based level. I know when we received the governor's proposal on the mental health reform with not one dime of general fund money in it, we struggled mightily to find the general fund dollars because we thought the proposal was important, and we did fund it with general fund dollars. And there's a need for more than what we did that year as well. And so I think what Senator Olson is saying is if you can be more efficient and find ways to serve people better at a lower cost, then you would just be able to serve more people instead of directing the savings elsewhere.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I would fully agree that if all things were equal, and you could save money in mental health, we would want to invest more money in mental health. There is certainly an increased need. All things are not equal for the counties. As Mr. Fleischner said, he has to cut his budget. If I have 10% less money to spend on human services, and I can only take those cuts from programs other than mental health, it means I will have to increase the cuts in some other areas. And counties don't look at people as only fitting a category. We try to look at the whole needs of our population. So if I find an efficient way to provide mental health services and save some money there, ideal world, I would put that money back into mental health services and increase the services there. But at the same time, I'm going to be cutting the services to my child protection population by not 10%, by 20%, because I can't cut any from mental health. That doesn't make sense from a county perspective. You will have advocates coming to you in the mental health area, and we appreciate those advocates. They're wonderful people who help us remember how important this group of people are. But you won't have advocates coming here for child protection. You won't have people saying we're not spending enough money there. And so if counties don't have the flexibility to meet all of our needs and can only meet the needs of a specialty population, we are not serving our citizens as well as we could. So, yes, we would absolutely like to put every bit of money that we save through better services and efficiencies back into that same pot of money. But the reality is our money is decreasing. We have levy limits, and we have cuts in state aids, and we have cuts in federal funding. So we need to be able to balance across all of our service populations.
Other questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fleischner and Ms. Brumfield, what I hear you say is that everything needs to be on the table. And I can identify with that because I think for a long time we have had a notion that there are certain things we have maintained in Minnesota as being sort of off limits or sort of we try to put them, pull them aside and hold them harmless. And frankly, I think we are at the point, for better or worse, that even though some of those very things have been long valued and seen as very top priorities in this state, we simply can't afford to do business like that any longer. So that's what I hear you saying. I think that it would be helpful, as I've been listening to the discussion, if you have an illustration of a county who has a plan that you can show that you would be utilizing your mental health dollars in X fashion and redirecting some dollars. I think if you had if you could show us an illustration of what that might look like for a county to give us some comfort that you're not chopping the whole thing out, that you are going to continue to serve. But the bottom line is, as that county unit, when the day is done, we are all going to be serving less services and fewer people, whether you're talking about health or education or public safety. No one wants to say that out loud, but it is, I believe, it's the truth. And my final comment and question is, I wonder, it seems to me, Mr. Fleischner, you talked about the number of layoffs at Olmsted County and the furloughs at Olmsted County. And how does that play into this situation when, on the one hand, your expectations haven't changed?
Right.
On the other hand, the resources, not only in terms of dollars, but in terms of human resources, have diminished, and I would argue, it seems to me, significantly. I don't know that, but perhaps you'd like to comment.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, or Senator Lynch, it's very challenging right now. We don't necessarily pick where people are leaving from either, and we're not able to rehire. So, for example, if I lose a bunch of child protection workers and I can't rehire those, That puts a lot of pressure on that system. What tends to happen is our caseloads grow. So as you said, it's more difficult to serve people. So if I'm, for example, locked into spending a certain amount of money in mental health, and I've got turnover in child protection, then all of a sudden we have a gap, and it's an important gap with a lot of liability and some very vulnerable people out there. So we're having to make those kinds of balancing acts right now. And as we listen to budget talks up here, it makes me even more nervous about what's to come. And so as we fight for just a little bit of flexibility, it seems reasonable as we're facing these kinds of decisions.
Other questions? I think I'd like to, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question, if you could. So is the county's proposal that if we were to adopt this proposal to eliminate the maintenance of effort in mental health, that any savings would be allowed to be, or any money that was not then spent in mental health would be allowed to be spent on other human service areas? Or are you proposing that the money could be spent anywhere within the county's budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we don't at this point have a specific proposal. We are going to be working with the Department of Human Services and with the advocacy groups to talk about, are there ways that we can assure quality services and the services this population needs while having greater flexibility? And certainly as a human services director, I would not want to see any of the money currently coming to any of the human services going anywhere other than to human services. So we certainly want to make sure the money stays in there and then work with the advocacy groups and with the department to talk about, is there a way of having more flexibility while at the same time assuring that the needs of this population are met to the degree that we can with the current funding levels. So there isn't a proposal right now. We do expect something to come forward in the future.
Other questions? I think I'd like to, before we take testimony from providers, I'd like to ask if the department could come, folks from the department could come up and just answer a few questions in regard to the testimony we've heard thus far.
Madam Chair, John Zockel from the Department of Human Services.
Welcome. So we've heard that the accuracy of the amount of the maintenance of effort is in question. We've heard that the timing of the notice of the amount for the maintenance of effort is not timely. And we've heard that the coding for the amount of maintenance of effort that's given credit does not always match the services that might be needed. And I wonder if you have any comments to make in regard to those.
Madam Chair, yes. The accounting that's involved here is complicated. We recognized that early on, right after the statute was passed. We called together a work group that included county directors, county staff, county fiscal staff. And at the time, I thought that we had worked out a consensus as to exactly how the methodology, the accounting methodology, should work in this regard. In addition, when the first reports came in for the first year, which was calendar 07, the reports came in a year ago, 27 counties were identified as being below the required level. We gave those counties an opportunity to make technical accounting corrections. And in fact, four of those 27 came into compliance solely by making technical corrections. Then of the other 23, we approved corrective action plans for 19 of the other 23. And many of those corrective action plans included an element of technical corrections to address legitimate issues in terms of both the base years, how things were counted in the base years, and in the year in question, which was 2007. So I feel that we've worked with the counties in terms of the technical accounting issues.
And you feel that they were resolved as they were raised?
Madam Chair, in most cases, yes. Of those 27 counties, there are still four that where they submitted corrective action plans and we haven't worked out a final approval yet. And in those cases, it did come down to some of the kinds of issues that Ms. Brumfield referred to. Questions such as children's therapeutic foster care. Is that a mental health service or is it a children's services? Or are certain components mental health and certain components children? Those are an example of the unresolved issues.
But it's only now for four counties?
That's correct, for 2007.
Okay. And what about the timing of the notices? So that they know how much their maintenance of effort has to be?
Madam Chair, that's a very legitimate concern. Our accounting staff at the time were busy working with counties on the technical corrections and changes for the previous year and weren't able to get those notices out in the time that we had hoped. We hope to do better this next year.
Well, I must just tell you that I have a lot of concern about the continual year after year staff reductions in the Department of Human Services and your ability to perform your functions according to law and according to the needs of people in a timely fashion. I know there's nothing that you can do about this, but I just have to tell you that as time goes on, there are more and more areas where we hear that the department isn't being as, isn't maintaining the kind of oversight responsibilities that we would expect. And I, for one, am getting tired of having hearings about it, you know. Calling people in hoping they'll get better, you know, kind of thing. if you want to take that back to your department, I think that would be in order. Are there other questions for Mr. Zakel? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, you had asked about the accuracy of the MOE, too. I don't think.
Well, I think he answered that question.
Okay, I didn't.
He said that originally there were a number of issues and they worked them out with all of the counties except for four.
Okay.
And I guess what the discussion is still ongoing in regard to those four.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So nobody's been penalized or anything like that because there's a disagreement up till now. Okay. All right. Any other questions?
Just to make sure, the disagreement is about what is allowable to be credited under maintenance of effort?
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, that is correct. As service models evolve, the reporting systems don't always keep up with changes in models, and some of the models don't clearly fall into one area or the other. So there's some legitimate differences of opinion then.
So,
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, so then I guess I'm wondering, as one of the concerns that the counties raised was the lack of flexibility around some of these issues that you've talked about, do you think that is in the process of being worked out then with most of these counties where it's more a question of how the department is interpreting some of this, and as you have kind of moved through that conversation with the counties, that flexibility has been given where it seemed to be appropriate?
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Zakel.
Senator Olson, we've been as flexible as we felt we could under the current statutes.
I think, Senator Olson, they're asking for more flexibility than the statutes actually provide. So, you know, I think there's two issues here. One is the issue of what expenditure meets the definition of mental health, And I think they've been as flexible as they can be there. But I think what the counties are saying is that they want flexibility to be able to generate savings perhaps and spend it in other areas of their budget and somehow have that still count as a maintenance of effort, meeting a maintenance of effort requirement. I personally feel like that's a pretty slippery slope in terms of how you would in the future ever know whether somebody was actually meeting a maintenance of effort requirement. Are there other questions for Mr. Zakel? Thank you very much.
Chair, I'm wondering if I could just make a comment, excuse me, regarding penalties. We may not have faced the penalty of losing our liability protection, excuse me, but many of us have had to increase our spending for this year in a very difficult time in order to meet whatever negotiated maintenance of effort. In our case, in Olmsted County, it's about $100,000. So, and many other counties have as well. So I think it's important to note that we are being asked to increase those things when we're increasing other parts of our budget. Just wanted to clarify that.
Well, I always notice that we never are at the state level given credit for the things we've taken over for you. I mean, we could start a ledger here, but we won't. There are a number of costs that in recent years have been taken over from the counties and growth in some areas that have been taken over from the counties, and those are expenditures that you're not having to make.
True. And as of counties taking on a lot of new things, too, I know it's gone both ways.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, or maybe just another comment. Of course, in this difficult time, and it sounds like the counties are not really proposing anything, or you don't really have a proposal, but perhaps we could look at some flexibility for just a temporary time and come back later and evaluate and make sure that the services are still being provided and see how that does progress. But I do feel that there's a lot at stake here on both ends. And I hate to say that counties should be looked at as a business, but there is, you know, there is a spreadsheet that they are very cognizant about, and we have to give them the flexibility to maneuver within that spreadsheet.
Madam Chair and Senators, I'd also just make the comment in looking at my budget since 2003. In 2003, about 70% of my budget was federal and state dollars. At this point, it's about 55% state and federal dollars and about 45% county. That's been a shift, and it's not just state, but it's because of some of the federal cuts of almost $20 million over the course of that time to the local property tax. That might be good policy, that might be bad policy. All I'm saying is it's put a lot of pressure at the local level, and that's why we're asking for flexibility.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, Patricia Coldwell, Association of Minnesota Counties. Just wanted to comment that we're not bringing a proposal forward today. Senator Erickson Ropes has authored a bill that I think will be introduced shortly that does have sort of some of these concepts that we talked about, providing some more flexibility, trying to increase the timeliness of reporting, and also trying to move towards a performance system. So you may have an opportunity to look at that. I think we view it as an opportunity to have a discussion with the legislature and with the mental health community and the department, and we'll be doing that as that bill kind of moves wherever. So just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on then. Let's take some testimony. Sue Abderholden.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sue Abderholden. I'm the executive director of NAMI Minnesota and co-chair of the Mental Health Legislative Network, which is a coalition of over 20 mental health organizations. The Mental Health Legislative Network is deeply troubled by the call to eliminate, change, or repeal the mental health maintenance of effort. On the surface, it sounds reasonable. They can only raise so much money in their counties. They need flexibility to deal with the cuts in state aid, and they know best how to meet the needs of people in their community. But if you go below the surface, you will see that this solution is wrought with problems. First, we think it's important to remember why the MOE was established. It was established because some mental health services were being switched to be covered under Medical Assistance, Minnesota Care, and General Assistance Medical Care, and new state grants were appropriated for mental health infrastructure and for services to uninsured and underinsured. The legislature, you, wanted county funds, which are now freed up due to the switch, to continue to be used to pay for much-needed mental health services. The whole point of providing additional funding was to add to the system, not to simply use a different funding stream. We think it's also important to state that the mental health system, despite some major advances, remains in a precarious state. There are many mental health services that are not covered under Medical Assistance, Minnesota Care, and General Assistance Medical Care. There are many children and adults who are not eligible for these health care programs and thus must go through the county or mental health centers in order to access treatment. County funds, funds that were maintained through the MOE, are there to serve the uninsured and underinsured and to fund those services that are community-based and focused on early intervention. Many community-based programs depend on county funds for their viability. It's extremely important to note the extent to which county funds support Minnesota's mental health system. The county funds under the MOE make up nearly a quarter of all funding for community mental health dollars and about 15% of total spending. Thus, reducing or eliminating these funds could cause the mental health system to collapse. We have heard some say that due to the MOE, mental health care is receiving preferential treatment. I have a really hard time with that statement. As an area that has been neglected, underfunded, and hidden, I would hardly say we're receiving preferential treatment. I would say that finally people have noticed us. It's only been in the last 6 months that the mental health parity law was signed into law. We still have a majority of our people in jails and on the streets. This is hardly preferential. It's a recognition that it's been very difficult to get 87 different counties to step up to the plate to fund and develop the promise of the 1987 Mental Health Act. There's not been a stream of counties jumping to the head of the line to build an innovative, comprehensive, coordinated system. Some counties infer that the MOE should be lifted because counties have met the needs in their community. As someone who travels the state, meeting with individuals with mental illness and their families, whose office takes in more than 3,000 calls from around the state, I'd like to know which county it is. Asking for flexibility and meeting the needs of current, asking for flexibility is different than meeting the needs of people in the community. Suicide rates are up around the state. We are clearly not meeting the needs. We have heard that counties would like to look at replacing the MOE with performance measures and outcome or incentive-based initiatives. I do want to say that this will not be an easy task. Let's take an earlier statement that a county no longer uses residential services for children, but uses foster care. On the surface, you might say, well, that's good. But do we know if children are receiving the intensive treatment they need in those foster homes? Are we measuring their progress? Do we know if families are simply told, no, you can't go, we don't send children to residential treatment? We don't know, in fact, if people are being served or not. Performance measures would need to be tied to a number of key indicators, such as access. People should have access to mental health care when and where they need it. Appropriateness. People should be treated appropriately with a focus on recovery. Effectiveness. People should get better. Efficiency and equity. People should be treated fairly and funds shouldn't be wasted, so treat them early. This means we have to look at data on waiting lists. Were people able to obtain services at locations and times that were reasonable? Did people have access to the right services, including education and screening? How many people were denied services? What are the readmission rates to acute psychiatric services within 30 days of discharge? Data from satisfaction services, the capacity of the system, including the number of culturally specific providers. If you'd like to take a really reliable piece of data to know if the needs are being met or not, I'd like to suggest that we survey the local sheriff and police and the juvenile justice system. If the county is fully addressing the needs, then people shouldn't end up in the criminal justice system. Some counties say the formula that was used wasn't right, that it caught some of them at a high spending point in time. The Mental Health Legislative Network would like to point out that while the MOE may have caught some people at high spending, it also caught some at a very low level of spending. It should also be noted that the MOE doesn't account for inflation or other events that could increase the need for mental health services, such as natural disasters, war, and economic stress. When you look at some of the spreadsheets the department has provided, you can see that the dollars per capita are very far-ranging, $4 to $44. What I'd like to point out is that that goes to the very heart of the problem. If some counties spent so little back in 2004 and 2005, what makes you believe that they are any more willing to invest in mental health care in their county? What makes you believe that they simply won't cut funding for mental health services? If they weren't committed to funding mental health services when there wasn't a huge financial crisis, why would they be willing to do so today? In my many years as an advocate, flexibility has meant reduction in services. I've worked on disability issues my entire adult life, and I'm older than I look, but I have never, ever seen a group of people face so much discrimination, misunderstanding, and frankly, inability to access the healthcare and social supports they need to thrive and live well in our communities. We have never been anyone's priority. It is problematic to simply say that people should simply lobby each of their county boards. With the stigma surrounding mental illness, you don't have people speaking up at county boards across the state. You barely have people publicly asking prayers for themselves or their family members. Child welfare and mental health are probably the two least powerful groups in any county, and yet we're already being pitted against each other in testimony today. If you eliminate or repeal the MOE, we will see a loss in funding and services. Whether the county's funded or not, children and adults with mental illness will still be there. Now, no disrespect to libraries, but if you close early, you might not get the books you wanted. You close a mental health center, and you can't access your medications or treatment, and you may lose your life. During this economic crisis, the need for mental health services is increasing. I agree that simply requiring a continued dollar amount based on an arbitrary point in time is not the best way to ensure continued commitment to mental health. The Mental Health Legislative Network agrees that dollars alone are not indicators of quality. We do believe, however, that funding is an indicator of commitment, especially considering how underfunded and disjointed the mental health system is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ed Idy, Executive Director of the Mental Health Association of Minnesota. The legislative network would be willing to discuss the following issues relating to MOE. A waiver of the current MOE by the Department of Human Services under specified circumstances tied to counties met specific criteria. A reduction in MOE if the legislature decides to unallocate county aids. However, the reduction to mental health MOEs must be proportional, meaning that if a county's mental health spending represents 5% of the entire county budget, only 5% of the unallotments can be taken from the mental health budget. A replacement of the present balkanization of our statewide system, with 87 counties providing services in 87 ways, by more efficient and effective regionalization, officially building on the efforts of the regional initiatives that have been in place, and creating a regionally administered approach to the delivery of mental health services. Centralization of rate setting. Many services required under the Mental Health Act were initially not covered by state health programs, but are now. It no longer makes sense for individual counties to do the rate setting for services such as intensive residential treatment services, which are medical assistance covered services. Smaller counties also lack the administrative expertise to apply the complex federal requirements attached for these services. The rate setting for mental health services, in particular those services provided under our state health programs, funds such as medical assistance, should be centralized at DHS. In addition, if counties' efforts toward funding and managing these services are going to be reduced in any way, and if regionalization is to be implemented in a meaningful way, these services should be open to those who need them and not just those persons a particular county has an obligation to serve. Removing host county contract requirements would go a long way toward equalizing access to needed mental health services.
Thank you. Are there questions for either of these individuals? All right, thank you very much. Ron Brann.
I have a handout here, if I could. Good morning. My name is Ron Brann, and I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, which is a statewide organization that made up of around 30 nonprofit organizations that have sites in around 130 different locations scattered all over the state. And we are providers that often the counties contract with to provide the services that we're talking about here today. In some cases, the county themselves runs and operates a community mental health center. And what I'm handing out really is a sheet that I developed by surveying our members and asking them how were the county funds that you receive, how are they used in your community? And the other side of the sheet talks about the payer mix within the community mental health centers. So just sticking with this, I'm trying to make the point the counties are key partners for us. They are essential for the funding that they provide and the contracting. They are the services that people need are often an intermixing of mental health treatment, rehabilitation services, and social services. And keep in mind, in my testimony the other day, I talked about the funding for mental health services being a three-legged stool that is often made up of health insurance or health benefits, private insurance, and county funds. And you'll see that in our membership, around 30% of the funding comes from county sources or through county sources. So some of the community mental health services funded variably, and it does vary greatly from county to county, are psychiatry services, especially targeted at people with more severely mentally ill. That is a large budget item. There is homeless outreach. There are community support program services that are try to outreach and engage people who may be reluctant to receive services and then provide them with supports for independent living. Drop-in services, housing support services. You can see that many of these are services that are not necessarily going to be covered by medical assistance or maybe wrapping around the core coverage that people have. A number of programs and providers do vocational and employment support services to try to help people link them up with jobs. There are contracts, many communities, most communities have contracts for outpatient therapy, for assessments, and for consultation services that are there for the uninsured, the underinsured. Family community support services are similar to the CTSS sort of services to help families with their skills and coping with their child with a severe emotional disturbance, really doing some of the services that may not be, again, reimbursable by a mainstream health plan. There's a growth in school-based services, often day treatment services, but because of the way the funding works, the cost of those services is not covered either by the school or by the insurance programs, and so counties often will supplement the cost of operating that program. Crisis services. Around half of the people who are seen in by a crisis service provider are uninsured or have insurance that would not cover the crisis service event itself. And so county funds or county grant funds are used to try to provide those kind of mobile outreach crisis services as well as residential crisis services or urgent care that might occur at a center. Respite care or other supports for families. There's a sizable number of contracts that are where psychiatrists or psychologists provide assessment or other services within a county jail under the contract with the counties. Court-ordered services or forensic services, transition support from inpatient or residential services. And then there's a number of services that are done as innovations. Really, as we've talked about it, there are several categories of cost sharing here, or MOEs. One is the cost sharing that it takes place when for a service like targeted case management or Rule 5 services or assertive community treatment where the county is paying the non-federal share of a service. And really, in order for that service to be available, the county funds are necessary to pay the non-federal share in order for us to attract the federal Medicaid. There is another category, our services for the uninsured. And those are typically provided on a sliding fee schedule in the local communities based on people's ability to pay for adults and kids. And that often involves diagnostic evaluations, outpatient therapy, psychiatry, in-home services, and case management services. There are services for people who are underinsured, where their insurance has limits or caps, or they have exhausted their benefits, or they have high cost sharing, high deductibles, and they're just unaffordable for them. And the county funds help provide services for people where they have where the cost sharing makes it unreachable for many families. And then there's a number of services that are required by the way our programs are certified, or the program standards that we operate, various assessments, functional assessment. Screening to determine whether or not somebody is eligible for a service, developing a rehabilitation plan, and working with others to implement that. So selecting interventions and giving direction to a non-licensed individual who is going to actually carry out the service. These are all reassessment, collaboration between and among providers. These are all services that are required in our programs and required in our certifications, but are not currently reimbursable by our medical assistants. Finally, there's funds are used to offset uncompensated care or low rates for public programs, and there are many that have contracts that help support this, the basic operation of the centers. If you turn the page, you'll see that I have a breakdown of the 2007 sources of revenue for community mental health programs that I work with. You can see here that on average, there was about 33% that of the funds came through or by the county. There was about 40% were from the medical assistance fee-for-service account, and another almost 30% that came for PMAP clients. Private payer out-of-pocket was 5%. Medicare is a very small amount, et cetera. And there's a very sizable number of units of service, and you can do some calculations there. The point being is this reinforces the idea that the various services that I'm describing are really sustained by a combination of the county funds, the medical assistance funds, and the private pay or out-of-pocket payments that people receive. And any cut to any one of those destabilizes the whole. How do you have sufficient numbers of people with a payer source to be able to have a day treatment program or to have staff who are available to provide the services that we can eventually draw down from the federal government if those services are unsustainable given the way in which the funding is there? So we worry in the sense of if the county funds are there. Now, just another perspective is that in some ways I think that the MOE that we have does provide, in a sense, some protection at the local level. In local communities, there are lots of pressures on county boards for where they should spend their funding, and that this is not the most attractive group to be making a priority, and there is always going to be more popular causes at the local level. In some ways, I think having an MOE provides a way for the counties to dedicate funds in this way and not necessarily become to blow with the wind in the local popular programs.
Especially in this case where there's so much variation.
One more thing. The mental health system in total really is probably by now about a $1.5 billion area of work. The county MOE is about $117 million of that. And so one of the perspectives that our members would have is that while the county funds are essential to make the three-legged stool work, they are actually a fairly, they're not the whole part of the picture, and that having there's a way of sort of balancing how much influence comes from any one source. We need that funding. That funding is essential for some of these things to operate, yet it actually is only a part of the whole picture, if that makes any sense. And because so much of the mental health services have become part of our common benefit set that is provided through public and private health insurance these days. And those are paid directly to providers. Thank you very much. I'd be glad to take questions.
Are there questions? Okay, thank you. Kathy Prevey.
And somebody else.
Oh, is this John Marchand?
Yes.
Okay, come on up. I was going to call on you next.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Creve, and I'm the executive director of Vail Place, which is a mental health organization that has locations in Minneapolis and Hopkins, Minnesota. And we serve over 1,800 people a year, and most of those individuals are receiving services that are not billable by insurances or by medical assistance. Everyone we serve has a serious and persistent mental illness. And the mental health redesign that was done a few years ago really focused on how to build a comprehensive service. And this comprehensive services just does not include medical treatment, psychiatric treatment, but also includes the other pieces that make the whole system work together, like employment, housing, helping people apply to get onto medical assistance, helping people with other benefits so they stay on their insurances, and helping people with general support from day-to-day needs that they can't receive in any other way. And these are some of the things that Vail Place does. For example, housing is a very critical service that we all agree is important. We serve over 350 people a year in housing. And we know that without finding housing and maintaining housing, every bit of medical treatment and psychiatric treatment will not work. It doesn't matter if you don't have a place to live or you cannot live in your house because it's so substandard or the rent's too high or it's in bad conditions. So these services help make mental health treatment and medical treatment work. And it's very cost effective. Our agency, because we own our buildings, our cost is just over $4 a day per person. We are using state and county money in the most effective manner. And part of that is we can leverage that money. As a nonprofit, we can do private fundraising, we can go to foundations, and we bring in over $400,000 a year because we have this base of funding. And we leverage this in such a great way that we can add services because of the maintenance of effort that we receive. And the loss of maintenance of effort devastates services and the number of people we serve. And Vail Place is just one example of a small nonprofit across the state of Minnesota. But there are so many others like us, and we know if there's a loss of maintenance of effort, there will be a loss of services to people with mental illnesses. I've been in this business for 30 years. I was 10 when I started, of course. But over those 30 years, I've seen that what happens is people with the most serious mental illnesses are the least respected, the ones without the voice, the ones that do not get the services. And the mental health redesign really brought that to the forefront. And for the first time in all the years I've worked here, said, we fund mental health services. They are important. And without the maintenance of effort, I know that will go down and people will lose services. And what happens is, as we can't serve as many people, is you see how it plays out in the entire system. You see more homeless people. You see people who you might call a nuisance person on the street because they don't have access to services or their way in. And those experiences are costly. One of our goals is to keep people out of costly services like hospitalizations and crisis services. And we also know if people do not have access to programs that provide day-to-day problem solving or help people to maintain their housing or employment, that they will sometimes become homeless, end up in the criminal justice system, and cost taxpayers much more money, particularly when they're hospitalized for long periods of time. And to small agencies, this is also a loss of large amounts of money, which means you get to a certain point, you really can't exist anymore. So it is really important in order to serve the entire mental health system that we just not rely on medical assistance and insurance companies, because there are so many other pieces that are not funded. And we're the glue that kind of keeps in between the mental health and medical treatment and keeps everything together and is a very important service to the people we serve.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, just a comment. It seems to me that if people ultimately lose services, whether it's in mental health or any other area of health and human services, I believe that it will be as a result of the budget situation that we are in, not as a result of any decision around maintenance of effort.
Any other questions? Okay, John, do you want to?
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is John Marchand, and I am a programs administrator for Greater Minnesota Family Services. We are a nonprofit Rural 29 mental health clinic that serves 36 counties in rural Minnesota. This is my first time speaking, testifying before our Senate committee, so longtime listener, first time caller. Our practitioners work in the homes of the people that we serve. And we also operate day treatment facilities across the state. We have 4 day treatment facilities. And we are working with kids who are at imminent risk of out-of-home placement. These are our kids with major depressive disorder, reactive attachment disorder, very major clinical disorders that put them at imminent risk for being placed out of their home and out of their school environments. We serve approximately 90 kids per year in our various day treatment facilities. We serve upwards of 1,000 children and families per year on a family-based setting. If you want to think of a number, a rough cost for placing one child in a residential treatment facility, one child for an average stay would be about $45,000. When Ron Brand was up earlier and he talked about the three-legged stool, that is probably the best metaphor you can imagine for the way that this system works for us. When you have MA, when you have private insurances, and when you have county pay as 3 legs of that stool, the platform being ultimately the services we provide to kids and families, if one of those pillars, if one of those legs of the stool is removed, the entire stool is compromised, and the services that keep our kids in their homes disappear. County pay represented about 22% to 24% of our total operating budget for 2008. That's a major piece of what keeps us in business. If that is removed, we cease to be, and we cease to be able to provide those needed services to kids and to families. There is quite a variation between rates of county reimbursement across the state. That's why it can be such a moving target to really put a key on. A couple of examples. There is one county where we receive about $107,000. There's one county where we receive about $8,000. So it is really across the board, a flat rate, as you can imagine. There's quite a bit of variability. But again, these are services we're providing to at-risk children in rural Minnesota. And one of the biggest obstacles we have is access to services. Many of these kids who live in Sacred Heart, in Belgrade, in Bruton, in El Rosa, in Halleck, you know, little towns of about 700, 800, 900 people, or people who live in an unincorporated municipality or in a township where the nearest mental health center is 40, 50 miles away and has a 3-month waiting list and they need access to care now, we're their front line. They depend on our services. So I would state that the maintenance of effort in keeping those county funding dollars in place is very vital to our organization and is very vital to keeping children in their homes and assisting their families.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right. The next item that we're going to take up today has to do with the governor's proposal to create 15 regional human services authorities to replace the counties. And we thought it'd be good to get a presentation about this because it was mentioned in the governor's State of the State address, but we didn't see any budget pages that related to it. And we do believe that this proposal would have a fairly major impact on our area of the budget in terms of formulas, in terms of maintenance of effort, in terms of lots and lots of things. So,
hold on a second.
Assistant Commissioner Wilkin.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for having me here today to talk about the governor's proposal to redesign the delivery of human services. I've asked to be passed out the draft copy of the the language. I'm trying to get rid of the swirl of speculation of what's in the bill and what's not in the bill. I've got some introductory comments first, and then I'll kind of walk through the bill a little bit. The language is at the revisers, so hopefully it'll be published and introduced soon.
While we're on that subject, Assistant Commissioner, do you know when the language for the governor's budget bill, as it affects health and human services, will be introduced?
I am not sure. I think it's in the process, but I can't really tell you where at this
point. Well, if you want to take the message back that we have concern that we have not seen it yet.
I will do that. The history of counties and townships in providing welfare to our citizens goes back to the establishment of Minnesota as a territory in 1849, when there were 9 territorial counties. Today's structure of 87 counties dates back to 1923. While federal and state programs and the accompanying rules and regulations have increased in size and complexity in the last 75 years or so, the basic county delivery structure has not changed. In 1973, the legislature took up this same issue and passed legislation to encourage counties to form multi-county human services organizations. Since that time, 2 have been formed involving just 5 counties: Lincoln, Lyon, Murray, and Faribault Martin. According to the Legislative Auditor's 2007 report on Human Services Administration, counties indicated that they have not consolidated because there's no requirements and or financial incentives to do so, and because mergers can be politically difficult. They're correct. The 2007 OLA report highlighted several key problems, such as access, cost, and outcomes that vary significantly around the state. Some counties, usually those with smaller populations, consistently fall behind others in performance measurements. Complexity in law and administrative requirements has made service administration more burdensome, especially for smaller counties. And state and counties are not adequately addressing performance problems. The report also noted that more use of multi-county human services agencies could improve cost effectiveness, consistency, and administrative efficiency. There are currently 69 counties with populations less than 50,000 people, and 18 of those counties have less than 10,000. Both the counties and states in the audit agree that 87 counties and 84 human services delivery systems is not working as effectively and efficiently as possible to ensure Minnesotans receive equitable access to higher quality services, the current system is not sustainable. I'll go through the governor's proposal and then hopefully be able to answer some of your questions that you have right now. The governor has proposed establishing a human services delivery system that forms no more than 15 human services authorities. These authorities will carry out human services delivery duties currently conducted by individual counties. And there will be a single administrator to establish, is established for each human services authority. Counties can choose whether or not to be certified as a human services authority. Those counties meeting the requirements of a human services authority will be able to earn back a portion of their county program aid reductions. Counties with populations of 250,000 or more may serve as their own human services authority while working in collaboration with other county human services authorities or smaller counties to provide shared services. Counties with population less than 250,000 and in close geographic proximity to each other would form multi-county consortiums to reach a population base of at least 100,000. The proposal also allows the commissioner to grant exceptions to these requirements if deemed to be in the best interest of the state. The counties also have some duties that are established and a timeline is established. The proposal provides a timeline between November 1st of this year and January 1st of 2012 for submission of certain certification requirements in order to be eligible for county program aid payment increases or reductions in the reduction. June 1 of 2012 and after, aid payments will be awarded based on meeting certain performance standards. And for counties who initially choose not to be certified, the proposal provides a process so that they can join a human services authority at a later date. The commissioner will notify the commissioner of revenue annually that these certification requirements have been met. You'll see there's an assignment clause in here. The commissioner is also given the ability to create or make assignments to a human services authority in limited circumstances where a county has submitted intent to join a human services authority but has been unable to secure such a partnership. Or if more than 15 human services authorities are proposed, and trying to work that so that we get down to the number that is agreed upon. If a county chooses not to join a human services authority and has later failed to meet certain performance criteria, then they may also be assigned, and that would be after the June 2012 date. This bill also forms a working group to work out the issues involved with recodifying statutes over the interim. That group would include the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Association of Social Services Administrators, the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, unions that represent the county employees, and the representatives from the Department of Human Services, Health, and Corrections. We will work with all those groups to work out some of the many details. This is obviously a framework bill to put the framework in place and give it the necessary time to work out the details that will inevitably come up. We believe this model of human services delivery will enhance oversight and ensure accountability, increase efficiency by eliminating redundancies in administrative functions, streamline management and supervision, improve cost effectiveness in contracting for services, make needed expertise available across the state to deliver infrequent, specialized, and complex services, increase the capacity to plan and develop services to meet community needs, increase the consistency of services and access, and lessen vulnerability to financial shocks that result from large, unexpected costs. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to take questions.
So I don't want my questions to be taken to mean that I don't think this is a good idea, but there are still a lot of questions that are unanswered even when we see this language.
I agree, Madam Chair, and it's our hope to clarify as much as possible and address any things that haven't been contemplated yet in the bill.
So when you say that aid could be earned back by doing these consolidations, what does that mean exactly? Is that local government aid that the counties otherwise would not be able to receive?
Yeah, Madam Chair, the current aids that the counties get are, as you may recall from 2003, called county program aid now. And in the revenue bill, they're cut by about half, and half of the cut could be earned back approximately. If they participate in a multi-county or within the framework of this bill.
And then the questions that I had earlier had to do with how do we establish for these regions then what the formulas would be for the various funding streams that are provided through the Department of Human Services?
Madam Chair, it's left in the framework for the consortiums of counties to work out if they each have a little different maintenance of effort in an area like mental health or chemical dependency treatment. once they form their group of 8 or 10 counties, whatever they have decided, the bill is not prescriptive in regard to saying which counties will work together. There's no map. There's no list of counties. It's up to the counties to choose their partners. Then they need to come together and work through those issues of what the assignments of the ongoing money is.
Well, would the counties that come together have to be contiguous?
Madam Chair, the bill does not require them to be contiguous. It expresses a preference for geographic proximity, but there is ability in the bill under the commissioner's authority to deviate from that if a group comes forward that is more of an affinity group rather than a contiguous region, as many people would view it.
So would you expect that if this legislation is passed, that next year we'd have a plethora of legislation coming in to change various formulas and various maintenance of effort requirements?
Madam Chair, I guess I wouldn't expect that. I would expect that we would have some a bill to recodify statute to make it work in harmony with us. I would also expect that some ideas to come forward in how to, if counties expressed a preference in having some statewide consistency with allocating between the member counties of a multi-county collaborative.
Well, would it be the department's intention to try to maintain somewhat of the same revenues going into a group of counties that would have been going into them individually?
Yes, ma'am.
And would it be the department's intention that counties that have a maintenance of effort would have a relatively same level of maintenance of effort, although it might be different because counties are being brought together?
Madam Chair, I think that would be how it would most likely work. It does leave some of that to the counties, but in an aggregate basis, it would not change a maintenance of effort in this proposal, say on the mental health. That would not change the maintenance of effort requirements. The counties might get together and change an allocation of expense among themselves, but overall it would
right.
need to be
right. I understand
be
that they might change how
exists.
They're spending, but overall they would still be meeting approximately the same amount of maintenance of effort as they would have met individually?
That's correct, ma'am.
Are there other questions? Senator Lynch?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner Wilkin. A couple of questions. I wonder if you can provide any comment on the number 15, if what the rationale was there. I'm also interested to know if there are other states that we might look to that have entered into arrangements like this. My third question is, I'm not as familiar with other areas of the governor's budget. Are there other areas, I'm thinking particularly of public safety, that similar proposals are being vetted there? And then just a comment, I think I can visualize how this might look or work in some areas, and I'm thinking I can see it in areas that are close to or part of some urban centers. I'm thinking of St. Clouds and Duluth's and the metropolitan area and the Rochester area. It's not as clear to me how this looks or works in the greater Minnesota area where, frankly, you know, just the distance, and you noted, you know, some of the population bases in some of those counties. And so I just wondered thoughts along those lines.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, first let me address the distance issue. This does not prescribe that if a county, say a contiguous group of 10 counties got together, that there would be one and only one delivery point, so that people would have to, you know, in the northwest corner of the state, obviously the geography there and the populations would dictate that it could get pretty big quickly. As a matter of fact, I would think that there would be some nexus in each county maintained, because certain human services are going to require feet on the ground. Child welfare, for instance, you want people that are in the county that can step foot in the home and make sure that that child is being taken care of properly. Whereas other services, maybe complex waiver enrollment, might be better served being done in one spot in the Human Services Authority. The bill does not prescribe exactly how that happens, so we want to leave things to the creativity of the multi-county human services collaboratives, and you know, the best practices will quickly be formed, I believe. As far as the number 15, I wouldn't say it's actuarial or scientific. It's a goal to reduce the number to have a significant impact, realizing that we're not going to be doing this every 2 years or every 4 years or hopefully even every decade. I mean, this is a big deal, and we want to get it right up front. I don't think anyone would look at these days at Minnesota, draw geographic 87 boxes, and say this is how we're going to deliver human services. It was done in a day when horses were the main mode of transportation. Things are significantly different now. Technology and other things have made it so that we can deliver human services over greater distances. So 15 was really kind of looking at a list of counties, their populations, and what would be realistic to get to. Also informative was some of the other service delivery systems, not human service delivery systems, but other groupings within the state. And I'm going to blank on them right now, but I can give you a stack of maps for other types of things that we looked at, but we did not want to be prescriptive and say you're going to fit into this cookie cutter or that one. As far as other states, I believe there are 11 other states that deliver human services through counties rather than a state-run, regionalized approach. And as far as similar proposals in other areas of the governor's bill, I do not believe there are any that are similar to this. I could be mistaken, but I can't recall any.
And Senator Lynch, I would just say, based on the work that was done over the interim in regard to the Committee on Administrative Simplification, a lot of times it is the smaller rural areas that need to come together the most. An example that we talked about somewhat was estate recovery, which I'm still not sure whether it should be done at the county level or the state level myself, but if you're a very small county, you might not even get one case per year. And most of the time, no two cases are the same because, you know, the property involved, the services that were received are different. And so if you're a very small county, you just don't have the expertise. You can't be expected to have the expertise to do a very good job of estate recovery. And so, you know, getting counties together to do it so that you have a larger critical mass, so you have more cases per year, so you can have a person that can serve in a capacity of having some expertise because they're doing that all the time, makes a lot of sense. Larger counties already have somebody doing it all the time because they have enough critical mass to warrant that. Just one other question about this aid. So is the governor's budget budgeted for half of the aid cut not to take place, or are the larger counties that don't have to consolidate just by virtue of their being going to get half their aid back?
Madam Chair, I think the revenue and I don't have the revenue page with me, so I'm going on memory, but I think the revenue bill assumes that counties will participate in this, and so that it doesn't take savings for the full cut. It assumes that the counties will earn back the portion and that they'll participate in the process. As far as the large counties, there it does provide that the county larger counties have to participate, not necessarily in pairing with another county. They do have that option, but in providing shared services. And if you look at page 2 under subdivision 4, there's some provision halfway through the paragraph says these shared services arrangements may include but are not limited to, and then there's a list enumerated there. It's basically encouraging them to share their expertise with some of the smaller collaboratives or individual counties that are going it on their own.
But how would you judge whether they've earned back their aid?
Well, once they indicate that they're going to once they've identified what services they plan on sharing, they'd indicate as such to the commissioner, and then the commissioner would make a determination if there's some participation there or not.
So all they have to do is say they're willing to share something. If nobody wants to share, then they've met their responsibility?
Madam Chair, that is one of the more difficult areas to work out, because we don't want to force them to offer a service, and then if there's no takers, penalize them. That's not the intent, but the intent is to get them to share some valued services across smaller entities.
Other questions? Senator Coring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I think you kind of, in a way, answered the question that I had, because I can see that this kind of makes sense for smaller counties that might have one case like you were just talking about. But my question to you, Assistant Commissioner Wilkin, is I'm assuming that the overall intent of this idea is that somehow we're going to save money, I'm assuming, but I can't really understand how. Maybe I'm just dense, but I don't really understand. So each county would not have to have a social services director, so then that would be the savings? Or what? Where would the savings, or other than what Senator Berglund said, I can understand that. That makes sense. But if the intent is savings, where do you find the savings? And then if you do, how much is the savings going to be? Does that make sense?
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, I would not look at this proposal as exclusively about saving money. Mm. It's about modernizing the human services delivery system to provide consistency of services across the state. If you look at the audit that was done, I've got a copy buried here somewhere, but if you go back to the 2007 audit that was done, it was very clear in the audit that services are not being provided, and services and benefits are not being provided on a consistent basis throughout the state. And part of the problem is the programs have become so much more numerous and complex than they were decades ago that counties struggle to provide those services consistently, especially smaller counties. Mm-hmm. They have not only federal and state statutory requirements, but they have circulars and guidance to read through from the department. And when there's cases just like Senator Berglund mentioned that are infrequent, it causes a lot of time to be consumed by county social services staff. I do believe there will be savings in here. We can't go from an 84-unit delivery system down to a 15 without getting some economies of scale. Can I articulate exactly how much that will be? I can't, partly because we're leaving this very much in the county's hands on how they will organically develop their collaborative, and to the extent that they will centralize different functions. I'd imagine some of the collaboratives will centralize more functions than others. It depends. depends on the service needs of the area. And we can't dictate that, and therefore we can't really do a model on how much will be saved.
Madam Chair, if I can ask
one
more
question.
Thank you. So when you say centralize, does that mean, like, let's say Crow Wing County, Morrison County, and Cass County, let's say that you're saying centralized services. Does that mean like this, somebody that's on the way far end has to travel all the way down to a central location to get services? That's not what you're saying.
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, no. It's I don't want to sit here and dictate what the model is going to look like exactly. But let me just say, excuse me. There is technology out there that can be taken advantage of now. New technology is coming online that's much more inexpensive, teleconferencing. We're waiting for some additional security features to be added to this technology. But I would anticipate if you're a waiver applicant and it's one of those waivers that's very complex to enroll people in, there might be a centralized person somewhere, a worker that is the intake person. The applicant can go to a kiosk in their own county and be face-to-face virtually with that worker that's 100 miles away in another county. 15. And that will be a much more efficient interaction from the standpoint of that worker will specialize in that area, and they'll be able to get the job done in a much shorter period of time, much more efficiently than someone who's dealing with these once or twice a year.
If I could just say one other thing.
Senator Coring.
You know, I personally look at this. I still don't understand all this health and human services stuff, and it just feels like it seems like we started out with a pile. And we just keep piling on, and we keep piling on and piling on. It's so complex and so confusing. I don't know. I just feel like we need. I like things simplistic, and it just seems so complicated on how we're providing services. But how can we? I don't know. It's just I'm just thinking, just spitting out words. But I just feel like everything is. This is so complex. And I think the counties somehow have to, every person, and it's amazing, like you would look at everybody in here, everybody is different in their own way. And to me, every case is different in their own way. And I think the counties have to be able to have the flexibility to, help a client who that might have a different circumstance. So.
Well, I can see this operating in a number of different ways. One might be, let's just take child care licensing, for example. Maybe 10 counties come together and they have one child care licensing director, but they have a number of child care licensing workers, and those workers are scattered throughout that area, but they report to one licensing supervisor, whereas today there might be a number of licensing supervisors. Another way to look at it might be you might develop a person of expertise, for instance, in waivers, getting people signed up and eligible and get their waiver services approved. You could do it through telecommunication, or that person could be in one location one day a week and another location another day of the week. And so people wouldn't have to travel so far, but that expertise would be available throughout that geographic area, whereas today the expertise might not be as good in terms of serving a set of clients.
I understand.
Senator Sharon had a question.
Thank you. I really like exploring intergovernmental cooperation, which is what I hear this. And I'll be interested in hearing how this unfolds as the work group, I understand, gets put together to sort of describe more specifically how it happens. But I do have these questions. In the Mankato area, we have something called the Coalition of Governments. It's called COG. That's its
acronym. And what it does is organize small cities like in my district, Nicollet, Cortland, Lafayette, would all be able to be a part of the COG, or the Coalition of Governments. And what they do out of their funding source is pay some money for this coalition. And that coalition provides for those small cities specialty expertises in designing certain ordinances or finding grants or dollars that are available to those communities, because they cannot afford, as small communities, that special expertise. It might even be legal counsel that is a shared expense between these very small communities. In that model, it's very successful, by the way, in that model, the cities still have their own money, and they then make a membership fee or a payment fee to the system. Another systems model is the Mayo Health System. In that model, the subsystems are all a part of one organization, and there is a centralized decision-making process that distributes resources and money out based on an agreed set of objectives, priorities, and they have every member of the system has its own board and its own priority setting, and then they compete for the resources. So my question for today is, as you're looking at the organization of these 15 human service systems, is the centralization at the state level mean that the resources are at the state level and then distributed, or is money still distributed to each of the 87 counties, and then they make the determination about they still have control, and do they have the capacity to remove themselves from one of these authorities if the sense of the objectives or goals or how the dollars are expended are not in the best interest of their county? How are you going to manage that?
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon.
Assistant Commissioner.
The money that currently flows to the counties will continue to flow to the counties and through the counties to the they'll form a joint powers board that will be their human services authority, and it'll flow back up to that. So they'll maintain some control. They'll maintain authority through the joint powers agreement or the joint powers board, as they do with other joint powers boards. So that will remain the same. Lincoln, Lyon, and Murray do that currently. They've worked this out. It's worked very well over the years. I think you talk to them, and they're great advocates of that kind of approach.
Okay. Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner. As I mentioned earlier, I do serve one of the programs, the Faribault-Martin County. And when it started, it used to have Watonwan County in on it, and apparently they spun off because – and I'm not sure if it was service delivery or maybe some personality issues or what. But after listening to the testimony, and now I'm a little confused about how this is going to work. It works very well in the Martin and Faribault County delivery. And I thought that's how we were going to go ahead with all the other 15 programs, that they would have to deliver all their services jointly. But as I'm sitting here listening, I'm thinking, well, maybe they could have a relationship or collaboration, Olmsted County with Houston County or Faribault County for child delivery or for a waiver program. And another part of their service could be with some other counties. And that sounds very convoluted. So my simple little mind was thinking, we are going to have the same, we're going to make these counties look at their relationships and some collaborations with other counties and have the entire delivery system all work together. Am I hearing that right, or am I hearing that wrong?
Madam Chair, within one of the 15 collaboratives, they'd be delivering human services together. All the counties within any given collaborative would work together. They wouldn't necessarily work across the collaboratives, although that's possible. There's nothing in here that says they can't, But they would, you know, if there was a, you know, say a 15-county collaborative down your way, they would work together to deliver that any given service throughout those 15 counties in a,
so I think it's
in
how
a
you
more
were
uniform
thinking
way.
Originally.
Originally.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, if I could make just a suggestion that perhaps we should have one of the directors from one of those two programs come and explain how that has worked for them, some of the hurdles they've gone through, and how they would like to see this delivery process set up. I understand the population issue, but as I said earlier, listening to the counties at the legislative hearings, it's extremely important for them to have the flexibility to look at the services and how they deliver them, and then make those relationships and those collaborations. And I would just say that hopefully the bill is not that prescriptive that they can't, you know, maneuver a little bit on that. And hopefully it's not that prescriptive to 15. What if we can't get to 15? I'm just throwing that out. But, you know, and as Senator Sharon was saying, you have all these different other organizations. You have your Region 9s, your Region 10s, and they already have relationships built up with that. So there's a lot of different factors here that these counties are going to have to look at.
Madam Chair, just a comment.
Assistant Commissioner.
Senator Rosen, I agree. I think once you review the bill and have time to fully digest the way it's constructed, you'll find it's not prescriptive. That's probably in the eye of the beholder, but we've tried to avoid being too prescriptive and putting lists of counties or maps or anything like that into the bill, or telling them how, what manner, and what services they're going to deliver in what way.
Okay.
So there's a lot of room for creativity among the collaboratives in here.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I have a few questions, Assistant Commissioner Wilkin, but the first I'm wondering about is, to the extent that a service has been collaborated among multiple counties, would it be envisioned that the counties would then be sharing the cost equally of providing a service, or would it still be broken down based on the number of people in a particular county accessing that service?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, the bill doesn't dictate how that happens. If you look at Subdivision 3 on page 2, page 3, Subdivision 6, it refers to the county boards of commissioners must be part of the agreement, the joint powers agreement, and shall determine the proportional financial responsibility. So that's going to have to be worked out among the members of the collaborative, just like Lincoln, Lyon, Murray, and the others have done in the past.
Commissioner.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess thanks for pointing that out. I was just wondering about that, since we're not designating counties by region, and we're obviously there are some counties that are probably less desirable to be, they're more costly. You know, the services they provide are more costly. And so one concern I would have is just, you know, those counties being perhaps at a disadvantage as compared to other counties in how we're looking at how we're looking, so we don't have sort of cherry picking of things that would make it even more expensive for certain counties to deliver services. Or maybe we ought to be looking at trying to distribute those costs more evenly rather than, you know, as a state policy, I guess, is one question that one comment that I would make. And again, I'm not opposed to this idea necessarily either. I'm just thinking through some of what some of the ramifications would be. Because I know, for example, it's been pointed out that just the cost of buying software to handle the delivery of services individually among counties is something that, you know, could be, the cost could be reduced by sharing some of that. But then the other point of concern that I had was on Subdivision 5-4, where it talks about the commissioner developing performance standards, and basically it looks like having the exclusive authority then within the department to develop those performance standards that would then, I'm assuming, determine the amount of money that a particular collaborative would receive. And I just wonder if that kind of an open-ended authority without more definition is consistent with how we normally do things in terms of legislative responsibility for determining where money goes, and if that wouldn't be handing over a lot of our legislative authority based on some standards that we don't even have any idea at this point what they would be.
Assistant Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, as far as the performance standards, there's a set of performance standards that were developed and came out last January. I think the new set is due out shortly. I don't know if we have a date. It's maybe in March of the next iteration of the, you know, the next year. Those standards were developed, I think, in part due to, as a response to the legislative auditor report, that we're not monitoring performance adequately, you know, state DHS-wise and the county-wise. And those standards were developed, or those performance measures were developed in order to give county commissioners more feedback as to how their human services department is doing. Those will no doubt evolve over time. There's any time you start doing performance standards, you're putting you're establishing a baseline and a starting point for which they're developed. If there's ideas on how to improve those and make them meaningful, that those ideas are certainly welcome.
Assistant Commissioner, perhaps you could get the list of performance measures that you have developed already, and then when you are updating them, perhaps you could get us a copy of the updated version as well. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, thank you for that explanation, Assistant Commissioner, but I guess my comment or concern to that would be that, you know, with this kind of open-ended authority, those performance measures, it sounds like, would be left for possible future change within the total discretion of the department. And it seems to me like that would be handing over a legislative function as far as monitoring how these funds are allocated to the commissioner. And I would be concerned about that. I think I haven't been here long enough to know if this is a typical, you know, type of thing that's been done in the past, but it seems like we would be granting an awful lot of what would typically be legislative authority to determine how funds are allocated to the department in a pretty broad way.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we'd certainly welcome input from the legislature, and obviously the bill will be in your hands to make changes to. I can't recall something specific, but there are other times probably indeed where the legislature has outlined performance criteria that must be met, and the commissioner is the one who's around year-round and has to be the one to determine if those objectives have been met and whether the grantee gets the money or not. In this case,
so, Assistant Commissioner, is the money we're talking about here again local government aid?
I'm sorry, Senator.
Is the money we're talking about having performance standards tied to, is that local government aid money?
The county program aid.
County local government aid, okay. And I'm assuming that the standards that you've come up with are based on requirements in state law. You're not making up your own, are you?
Madam Chair, these are, I believe the ones that were published last year have been shared with you in the past. The department is currently working with the counties to revise the performance measures. They were the first crack at it. Now I believe we're working to adjust those, and the adjusted performance measures would be coming out is March, next few months.
Well, Assistant Commissioner, this is the first I've heard of this. So, no, the original set has never been delivered to me.
Okay.
And we did have this committee that included the Department of Human Services on simplification, in which the same auditor's report that you're referring to now was the topic of much discussion. So I am a little surprised that someone from the department wouldn't have shared that with the other members of that working group.
Okay. We'll make sure that you get a copy.
But Senator Olson, I just want to clarify whether you're making up your own standards or whether the standards are based on criteria that's in state law today.
I believe, Madam Chair, I believe the department created the original performance measures, and that they're being currently worked on for revision with the counties.
And Madam Chair, it says
Senator
here,
Olson,
it says on the sheet we're giving, at least, is that the performance standards as defined by the Commissioner of Human Services. So I'm interpreting that to mean that we would be giving the authority to the commissioner to develop.
Well, I understand what your point is. I'm trying to find out. This hasn't passed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to find out right now. Apparently there are some performance standards, and I'm trying to figure out if they were based on criteria in state law or whether they're brand new things that nobody has discussed previously.
Madam Chair, Senator, Roger Yarsmer from DHS. The performance measures that are being referred to were the result of the work product that came out of the OLA report, our response to the OLA report, and the calls for more performance measures. They're focused mostly on that. We had a work group within the agency that developed these broad measures based on the data that the different programs had and the different areas had. And we worked with the counties in finalizing those. That is more of a response to the OLA report, but they would provide for a foundation for this issue or these discussions going forward in terms of what we can look at. But I don't think that they're not definitive in terms of applying directly to this, but it would be a reference tool, a foundation to build off of. At this point, their purpose was to respond to the OLA report.
Well, and the OLA report was based on current state law and the disparities among counties in carrying out current state law. So then I would assume that the standards that you came up with were based on current state law.
Madam Chair, it wasn't based on current state law. It was based on, and there, I would not refer to them as standards, because there's, right now, I don't believe there's anything that the counties lose per se. It's a performance measurement tool for counties, county commissioners, who get very little look inside as to how they measure up versus other counties, is to give them that tool so that they know what areas they need to improve. The reason why that's referred to in here is because it's a standard. It's a performance group of performance measures that the is already underway as in development, on using those rather than recreating the wheel. The legislature can certainly establish their own set of performance standards with regard to this bill.
Well, I just have to say that my concern about this area would be that if local county aid is tied to these performance standards, and since that is in the budget of the tax committee, and the tax committee has very little working knowledge or discussion about the program elements that the standards would be based on, my concern would be that they, over time, will be writing standards for themselves or amending standards in relationship to programs that they have very little working knowledge of. And that would affect this committee and the budgets that we have to work with. And so I just see this sort of disconnect in terms of, I mean, I can understand why it's just easier to tie local aid to the proposal, but over time I can see it morphing into kind of a strange thing.
I'm sure I understand the concern, and we'll take it back and give it some more thought on how to create that a better tie there.
Senator Olson, did you finish?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I guess I did, and I think I hadn't even thought of the point that you were raised. I guess I was just thinking more along the lines of making sure that we were not giving away the legislature's ability to determine how money should be spent, specifically giving to the department something that could really impact how counties are receiving money and not having really any input or control over that.
Well, I think that's an important point that you've raised, and I think there'll be continued discussion about it. Senator Erickson-Ropes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is not so much about the details as the concept. And I'll just pull back a little bit from all the details we've been talking about. I'm a big fan of, like Senator Sharon was talking about, intergovernmental collaboratives and joint powers agreements and district cooperatives and ways in which we all can kind of reach across established boundaries and get along, create efficiencies, and try to do things better. It occurs to me, and I don't know if this is what Senator Lynch was thinking earlier when she asked if the governor is taking this approach in other areas, but at some time, at some point, as a state and as all the different committees, you know, I think we really should look at the whole map of Minnesota and not just look at this in terms of creating new districts for Health and Human Services, but is there a way we could do something more taking a systems approach to the whole state? And say, you know, for example, southeastern Minnesota is in the 3rd Judicial District, the 6th MnDOT Regional District. I mean, there's soil and water conservation districts. I have 20 different school districts. There's all sorts of boundaries drawn all around the state of Minnesota. It looks like a tangled ball of yarn if you just look at boundaries. Maybe there might be a more global way to approach the entire state and the services that we provide to citizens instead of just such a fractured approach. This might deal with one cog, and I like the general concept we're dealing with here and the fact that it's not very prescriptive, the fact that you're bringing a lot of stakeholders in to design how this is going to be most successful. But pulling back from Health and Human Services, I just wonder if and where we should be having this conversation about something more globally.
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Assistant Commissioner.
I certainly understand the sentiment, and I think if you talk to the Department of Health, they've done a little bit of this in the past. They've got 53, I believe, public health regions or whatever. I'm not sure what they call it. But if you try to do too much, the fear is that nothing gets done, and this is very much in response to the audit and the increased complexity in human services in particular. It has gotten the programs have become more numerous and more complex, and as Senator Coring had said, it's really hard to keep your hands around it. And so this is a good area that we can pick off and get something tangible done without trying to boil the ocean and taking on every different state service.
And along those lines, Assistant Commissioner, is the thought that we would not be, this would not lead to a discussion of whether there should be regional jails or regional, you know, sheriff's departments or in the area, other areas that the counties have some responsibility for?
Madam Chair, I don't think we wanted to take all that on as it just being too much. Certainly, you know, I don't have a lot of experience with the sheriffs and the jails.
I know that there have been proposals over the years for the state to fund regional jails. I mean, I know that's a fact. So, but you're setting that aside and saying, let's work on this, and then when and if we get this done, then we may talk about something else.
Yes.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much. Mine is more a comment than a statement. I've been involved in local government in a lot of collaborations like this, in which units of government are brought together in a kind of a non-prescriptive way to try to define how they might better provide services through a collaborative rather than individually. And I really believe in those. But I also have some fatigue in the battle. Because in my question about is there an allowance for people to move in and out of this, you know, we've had intergovernmental collaborations about libraries and all sorts of things, and as soon as something doesn't go one member's way, there can be this system of threatening to withdraw or to move out. And so I'm going to watch this process very closely because I have a little fatigue of engaging in something that really is built in to break down because we have an extraordinary concern about the not being non-prescriptive or being individual. And we lose then the capacity of creating all sorts of efficiencies and effectiveness and measurement and systematizing record systems and processes for collecting data on patients in this case or clients that comes from systems. And you can't have a system effectively operate unless at some time somebody has the ability to say to its members, everybody needs to contribute to the, everybody has to participate in this way in some of these organizational system things. It doesn't take away the fact that that system can meet, like the Mayo Health System, the individual kinds of needs in various communities in that system. But it does exercise some authority over administrative decisions in particular that allow for systematizing. And it's through that the cost savings occur, and then measurement can occur because there is a comparison, a fair comparison of apples to apples and oranges to oranges. So that's how I'm going to be thinking in this, that the discussion about not being prescriptive is one tension against the need for some very important and valued systemization.
Assistant Commissioner, would you think that out of this framework some of the prescription might develop so that, you know, eventually we're not going to have, you know, 87 ways of doing something even though we're calling it 15?
Madam Chair, I would think that that's how it would develop. I mean, as the 15 collaboratives come together and polish their way of delivering services, forward will come best practices. And once we have the best practices, we can propagate that throughout the state.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make one final comment and also to kind of echo what Senator Sharon said. One of the concerns that I've heard and I think even read about in the paper about this proposal without, I think, anyone really knowing exactly what was going to be in it, but one of the concerns is that it's not just adding another layer of cost and another layer of bureaucracy. And, you know, we wouldn't want to just see it become a 5% surcharge on the money that we already don't have enough of to put into services. So it seems to me that, you know, when you said earlier that cost savings wasn't really the driver for this, I would say cost savings ought to be a major driver for how we're looking at this. And, you know, considering the size of the budget and considering the need for services, I mean, the size of our budget deficit and our ongoing increasing need for services, I was hoping that the big driver for this was going to be a way to reduce some administrative costs and that was going to be kind of at the center of this, is that we're going to try to save the administrative expenses within the system. And so in terms of allowing a lot of, I mean, I understand the great, what's good about allowing the counties to develop this, but there's always kind of a natural tendency to try to protect your own turf, protect your own jobs within, you know, your system of government or level of government. If we're not achieving the cost savings by being somewhat prescriptive to make sure that we're getting all the cost savings we can, then I think we're losing an opportunity that I would have thought that this would be part of the reason for doing this.
Assistant Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I agree with you. It's and I didn't mean to imply that cost savings are not a factor here. What I wanted to say is that's not the exclusive goal here. That's one of many goals, others being consistency in delivery of services and benefits throughout the state and better service to the people who we're charged with serving, those being very important. I do think there will be savings. We're trying to find that balance that you're talking about between being prescriptive and giving the flexibility for creativity among the collaboratives. And we certainly want to see savings come out of this and expect to see savings come out of this. But I guess we'll find the balance throughout the legislative process. This is the starting point for the bill, and as other good ideas come, we're certainly welcoming of those.
So cost savings and achieving more uniformity and more better delivery system are not necessarily in opposition to each other. Yeah. Other questions on this issue? I'm sure we may have some more discussion about it, but I think this has been a good start to understanding it better.
That's great.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
Just a few minutes on electronic eligibility processing. This is now the new name for Health Match, in case you didn't recognize it. And there have been some more decisions made in the department about this, and so we wanted just to have everyone get an update. And so welcome to Joanna Berg.
Good morning. Thank you, Senator Berglund and members. My name is Joanna Berg, and I am the Chief Information Officer at DHS. I'm here today to give you a brief overview of enterprise architecture and to begin the discussion of how DHS will be moving forward with enterprise architecture. Before I begin this overview, I want to first mention Health Match. After assessing various options for developing an automated healthcare eligibility system, the agency, as you know, has decided to terminate the Health Match project. While I am not able this morning to discuss Health Match due to the status of our litigation with our former vendor, I would like to comment that moving forward, rather than focusing on a single system or program, we will accomplish our work in the context of enterprise architecture. Today at DHS, there are many programs, systems, and processes that effectively support and enable the delivery of human services for this state. Generally, within the department, individual businesses have solved business problems with line-of-business-oriented solutions. And while individually these systems and programs effectively deliver specific services, the result of this multitude of systems and processes is a segmented and often redundant service delivery capability providing service to the same client, to the same individual. To illustrate, our clients get various notices from the different programs they utilize. Currently, notices are issued by each of the systems that support each of the programs. Under an enterprise architecture approach, notice functions would not be built into each individual solution, but rather DHS would have a single notice function for all DHS programs and systems. Enterprise architecture addresses the pitfalls of the traditional government business model, impediments such as duplicative processes and siloed service delivery approaches that hinder information sharing and obstruct effective service delivery. At DHS, our vision for enterprise architecture is a client-centric enterprise business model to which service delivery capabilities across the department will be aligned. Enterprise architecture is not a system. It is a framework, a blueprint, a complete set of models and documentation that represents how services are obtained and delivered to clients and business partners. As a blueprint, enterprise architecture provides the organizing logic for business processes and IT infrastructure. It identifies how all parts of the agency work together to serve the ultimate end goal, which is the best service possible for our clients. In short, enterprise architecture encompasses the vision of the agency and provides the bridge to bring the agency from where it is today to where it wants to go. It is the tool that will assist us in understanding our current structure and the way it works, and how to move forward toward our desired future model. To help you visualize how enterprise architecture works, I would compare it closely to the concept of city planning. In city planning, zones are established for specific types of purposes, commercial, residential, industrial, with buildings within these zones constructed to specifications designed to meet those purposes. In the case of enterprise architecture, the enterprise is analogous to the city. The organization structure represents the zones established to execute the enterprise's core mission. Buildings and city infrastructure are analogous to computer systems and applications, which are designed to carry out their portions of the enterprise's mission. The core mission for the DHS enterprise is the provision of client service. DHS is embarking on the first steps of moving toward an enterprise architecture for the department. We have initiated a planning project to develop the methodology and framework needed to manage through an enterprise business model, not a line of business model. The project team is charged to identify an organizational structure, governance, mission, authority, and enterprise architecture methodology for DHS. With the appropriate role and authority and using enterprise architecture methods and tools, DHS will be uniquely positioned to provide an enterprise view that will enable a customer-focused and cost-effective end-to-end solutions. The project team's recommendations for an actionable enterprise architecture model are due in late March, and we will be making all future technology solutions within this enterprise architecture framework. An enterprise architecture enables and facilitates interoperability, sharing, and reuse of system functions within the agency by other state agencies or even by other states. It maximizes resources and increases flexibility in adapting to future changes. Minnesota's Office of Enterprise Technology is also working to develop an enterprise architecture methodology, and our work is being done in coordination with them. On a federal level, both CMS and ACF recently published a joint memorandum encouraging human services programs to use enterprise architectures. The move to enterprise architecture also positions DHS to comply with the Medicaid Information Technology Architecture, MIDA, which is the federal initiative to support the next generation of systems to manage our healthcare programs. The move to enterprise architecture will allow DHS to pursue an enterprise, client-centric approach to providing service that will provide benefits to all of Minnesota DHS programs, functions, and services. At this point, I believe DHS is uniquely positioned to align with and leverage the work at the federal level to pursue an enterprise, client-centric approach and to deliver human services in the most effective and efficient manner possible. I'm happy to take your questions.
We don't really have time for many questions, so we'll probably have to have you come back sometime. But one question that we do need to get answered before late March is, my understanding is that there's 90% federal funding for this enterprise architecture program. And so then the question is, where is the 10% going to come from? We don't see a budget page in regard to it. Would it just simply keep coming out of your systems account and you keep sort of siphoning off money from various appropriations to go into the systems account? Where does the 10% match come from?
Senator Berglund, I'm not familiar with the 90%. Are you tied to enterprise architecture? Are you talking about MIDA? I'm not aware of a 90% federal funding stream tied to enterprise architecture. You are correct. We do not have a budget page around enterprise architecture. We are looking at changing our business processes and changing our approach so that we work in this enterprise architecture framework and that we make our IT decisions in that framework. But we are not looking for money this year to move that forward. We believe we can do that. I might need to follow up with you on the 90%.
Would you finish that sentence?
We believe that we can move forward. We have a project in place today that is going to deliver recommendations to us on an enterprise architecture approach. That project will be providing its recommendations to us at the end of March. So we are hoping to move forward with this enterprise architecture framework based on the recommendations of this team, but we do not have a budget proposal to move it forward. This is the way we want to do business moving forward.
But we would have a whole 2 years starting next July. And are you telling me that you would be doing nothing then because you don't have a budget page? Or is there another financing mechanism within the department that this division does not know about? I don't know how much more direct I can be with my question.
Thank you. There is not another financing mechanism within the department.
So the idea is that you get a plan proposed to you by late March, and then you wait 2 years until you're going to move forward with it?
Do you mean, Senator Berglund, are you asking if we're going to wait 2 years before we move forward with healthcare eligibility? With a healthcare eligibility system? Or an enterprise architecture?
Enterprise architecture,
Senator Berglund. Enterprise architecture is a methodology that we are going to use based on the recommendations of this project. It is the methodology we hope to use to make IT decisions moving forward, asking folks in the department to look holistically at the client and holistically at the department as they make IT decisions, not making decisions on a line of business by line of business basis. This is a different perspective. It does not change the funding streams that are currently in place for our major systems or our other technology solutions.
So is this direction that you're moving in the future going to require any state expenditure?
Senator Berglund, moving forward with enterprise architecture in and of itself would not require state expenditure, but within an enterprise architecture blueprint, we will be making IT decisions around systems and our future direction that may, we're not at a point of knowing the future of the child support system, the future healthcare eligibility system, et cetera. What enterprise architecture is the client-centric blueprint within which we will be making those decisions and focusing our look on the client and a single holistic department look at the client rather than looking at the individual's healthcare needs, child support needs, social service needs, et cetera.
Well, let me ask this question differently then. Based on changes that either are being recommended by the governor or changes that the legislature might make, will you be updating your IT eligibility systems after this session?
Senator Berglund, each of our IT systems, our eligibility systems, and all of our IT systems are in a certain state of development. They're either in development, they're operational, or they're at end of life cycle. All systems have life cycles, and all of those systems are on a different life cycle. The eligibility system right now, the Maxis system is in an operational life cycle. It is not at an end of life cycle status. It will get there, as all IT systems will. I don't have the information with me to specifically speak to the status of each of our systems and where they are. Systems will certainly need to be updated to reflect changes that are made this legislative session. Policy changes, for example, require systems programming, and that's part of our standard processes.
And so would any of that updating be done based on this enterprise architecture model you're developing?
If at the end of March we make the decision to move forward based on the recommendations of these teams, then yes, updating would be done in the context of enterprise architecture as enterprise architecture evolves.
And would the money that is required from the state to do that come out of your systems account?
Madam Chair, for the systems that are funded out of systems counts, yes.
And for the systems that aren't?
Well, we have systems that are funded out of general fund. I mean, we have a number of different accounts that fund our systems. We have systems that are run and applications that are run out of general fund. We have over 250 systems and applications in the department. Some of them have the 200 fund funding, others do not. But there would not, we are not, we have not contemplated changes to the financing structure at this status of enterprise architecture. We're asking this enterprise architecture team to come back and give us their best advice on how we would implement enterprise architecture for the department. A financing strategy would need to be part of that discussion, but we are not there yet. We have not had that conversation yet.
Well, I'm just suggesting that late March is not a very good time to be bringing forward a new budget page.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that, and we do not contemplate bringing forward a new budget page around enterprise architecture.
All right. We'll probably have to have you come back to answer further questions of the division because we're past our time now, but we thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.